Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Christopher Daly. I'm an engineer with HP. This is Mike Glinster, part of the services organization with HP, and this is the performance of SharePoint 2010 with SQL 2012 with HP Gen 8 servers, a contrasting look between what we do in the lab and what we do in the real world. So I'm going to do this is a big room. We don't have a lot of people here, so if we want to maybe move in a little bit, make this a little more cozy, let's make this a real discussion instead of a presentation, because I think it probably serves a little better. So first slide, and I apologize for this is a little marketecture, but I think we can't have this conversation unless we really talk about what ProLiant Gen 8 is really about. So a quick hands, how many of you are HP customers now and have ProLiant servers? Okay, about half, that's good. So the Gen 8 obviously is the latest generation of ProLiant server. It's built around performance and manageability, the idea to optimize itself in the data center. It's an extension of the Gen 7, and it just is where we're going in the future. And it's everything that's new and exciting. And there we go. All right. But that doesn't answer what I do in HP, because I don't build the servers. What I do is I test the servers, and I test the servers specifically with SharePoint. And how I do that is with a product called HP Load Runner. And maybe some of you remember that. It's from a company we bought called Mercury several years ago. But it gives us a platform that we can use that actually lets us script and create logic behind testing the environment and test it a way a real customer would actually use SharePoint. So in something like Team Studio, where you can sometimes activate some of the SharePoint functionality without actually having to go right through IIS, we're doing it the way the customers would really, really do it. And we're doing it from a standpoint where every customer has its own IP address. So it really looks like, from an application standpoint, customers are hitting the server and we're getting real live performance. So how do we do this with Load Runner? Because getting Load Runner set up with SharePoint is actually rather difficult. You can record the transactions, the things that you want done, and then parameterize them. And there's a lot of parameters within SharePoint that you can capture and replay, things at a farm level, things at a site level, things all the way down to a web app level that you can grab, parameterize, and allow you to reuse your code a lot. But there are three values that you need to understand for SharePoint 2010 in order to make the continuity work right. And these are hidden values within the HTML page. And what happens is that when you get this page, you have to grab these parameters and then pass them back in your next request. I mention this because you can get Load Runner for free. And did we hear that? Free. It gives you the ability to do single-threaded testing. You don't need a license for it. You can build your own test. You can go out, if you're a developer, you can test functionality the way the customer is going to see your app. If you need to test it in a large volume environment, this is when the licensing comes in. Do several hundred, several thousand, several 10,000 users against your environment. But it is a tool that's interesting to play with. You can build a lot of logic into it. You can make a lot of decision points. You can make a lot of wait periods, which, you know, if you think about it, when you load a page, what do? You read it, right? How long does that take? A couple seconds. Well, you need to make sure that when you build these things, you build in these wait times, things like that. So we've taken our skill and our understanding of Load Runner and my understanding of SharePoint, and we've built what we call the Enterprise Collaborative Workload. We based it around the five areas where we think that SharePoint is being used primarily. So document centers, team sites, portals, so general portal stuff for a large enterprise, my sites and search, and we break it down that at any given point, this is what the percentage looks like if we've got a large user base running. Now, we know SharePoint doesn't make any sense to performance test it unless we are actually changing content within the SharePoint site. So we do things like document check-ins, document checkouts, file uploads. We test basically every task in such a way that a real customer would. So reading, writing, making content modification. And I won't read the slide. You can all read the slides. So what does this look like when we actually test something? So here's a typical relatively small configuration. Couple servers, DL380Ps, front end to back end, split it up much like you would. We figured that this would be a good environment for, say, maybe a 2,500 user deployment. And Microsoft will tell you that at any given time, that your install base will be about 10% active, so you have 10% concurrency. They say sometimes it pushes to 15. We like to say 15 to 20, but let's use their number, right? Let's use 10%. If we're gonna put 10% out there, we need to generate 250 users running against the system simultaneously. This is what it looks like when you run 250 users against the system simultaneously. Remember, this is a two-core box, and we're running maybe 30%, peaking to about half. A lot of memory, you know, for a front end, that's not too bad. But what's happening in the back end is that we're recording about 1,500 hits on the client side. If you look at ASP.NET, requests per second, which is a good example of what's happening at the SharePoint side, about 1,000. I think it's a little over, actually. And we're doing about a little over 80 full transactions. So if you think like navigating to a certain folder within a doc center or opening a task as a transaction, we're doing about 80 per second. And that breaks down to about 4 searches a second, a little over 3 check-ins, a little over 3 checkouts, 3 document uploads into the environment, and we are running versioning, so we are obviously creating new copies of these things, growing the databases. What does this look like on the SQL side? Not too bad, 4%, you know, a lot of memory, a lot of IOPS. We're seeing a lot of reads, about 50 megs per second on average. Here's the chart that should scare you. This is what your network looks like. Now, we've separated out our configuration so that we're running 2 links, one to the front end from the clients, a second link down to the SQL server. Gigabit connections between the two. And we're consuming half to 2/3 on the front end of a single network port. Thank God we separated out the SQL traffic, because we would consume the entire thing and push it over. These are things we need to know about. And I think if you went to the keynote yesterday, or yesterday, thank you, what day is it? You know, one of the things they talked about was reducing that network consumption. This is why. What does this tell us, though? What does this really tell us about SharePoint and HP Gen 8 servers? Well, it tells us if you bought 2 servers, which is a relatively small configuration for a 2,500 user environment, you've over-partitioned. You've spent too much money. That's kind of scary. Think about that for a second, right? I mean, that's a small configuration for something so large. The truth of the matter is that, you know, in a single server, you know, from HP, a Gen 8, we now are producing more power than we went to the moon with in 1969 than NASA had. So how do we use this, right? What's the solution? Because, you know, the servers are going to get faster. They're going to get more powerful. Virtualization. Who virtualizes today? Hands up. How many people use Hyper-V? A couple. All right. Everyone else, obviously, ESX or a third product, right? Okay. Microsoft's new version of Windows, Hyper-Version version 3, brings it in line with ESX5. 32 cores within a VM, the hypervisor can support a system up to 160 cores. It's pretty exciting. It's a big jump over what we had in version 2, because now we can actually scale these environments a lot better. In fact, Microsoft used to say you don't virtualize the SQL server because you only had 4 cores of performance, and 4 cores just wasn't enough for most environments. Now we can go to 32. And who knows the licensing for SQL Server 2012? Per core, right. What's the smallest core count ProLiant server, or any server, basically, that you can buy these days? 8, 6, actually, I think it's 6 is the lowest you can get. Microsoft's licensing for virtualization says you have to have 4. You have to buy at least 4. That's fine, 4 is pretty good. But it means that now, if you virtualize SQL Server, you can add your licensing a core at a time and not have to buy a larger box or turn off some of that technology. Furthermore, they've added things like a virtual HBA, the ability to allow the VM itself to handle the connection into your fiber SAN with its own worldwide ID, which means as you move that VM around within your environment, that connection stays with it. You don't have to worry about it from a host level. So what does SharePoint look like when you virtualize it on top of SQL 2012? Down to a single box, still running two different servers, got a front end and a back end and a VM, 24 cores on the front end, 8 cores on the back. Now, our connection between the front end and the back end, we're running across the in-memory bus, so we don't have to worry about that network port. Oh, look at that, I've got a typo. All right, well, every presentation has one fail. That's my fail, so we should be good from here on in. 24 cores. Now we're using just over a third of the box on the front end. We're peaking up to almost about 80%, which is about where you want that front end. You don't want it to go over 80, because as you get closer to 100, you're gonna start hitting that performance point. You hit 100 and you know everything slows down. Back-end performance, 8 cores. We're pushing up to 15%. We're peaking into 30, so we probably over-partitioned the back-end. But what that means is that we can drop down that cores, reduce our licensing costs, and still have the overhead in the box available for, say, you know, an Exchange deployment. Network looks the same. We're beating the heck out of the front end, but now that back-end traffic's happening inside the box. One of the things this tells us is that as you're doing these deployments, as you're looking at this, you really need to pay attention to your networking. You know, look at some of the products that are available out there, 10 gigabit Ethernet in the data center. And that's the stuff that I do in the lab. Now, that stuff gets used. We take that, we present it in white papers, we stick it into our sizing tool. And if you haven't seen our sizing tool, we're actually showing it on the show floor in the show, so come on down. But it's also used by our services folks. And Mike's going to talk to you here about some of the stuff he's done out in the field with some of our customers.
Right, so my name is Mike Linster, and I'm the lead for our services arm for SharePoint and collaboration. And here's a couple of case studies that we've dealt with in a recent past on our server structure. So at one point, I was working for a Canadian telecommunications company, and they were implementing SharePoint 2010 as their intranet. They wanted to do web content management for an intranet, collaboration for their team sites, and enterprise content management. We went in and we did the RPS calculations of about average 75. If you all know RPS numbers, requests per second, and a peak of 150. We're looking at about 1,000 average users and about 3,000 for a peak. This was a company size of about 30,000. This was their original architecture. Their front-end web servers, their query servers, and their crawl servers were all virtualized infrastructure. Their app servers and their SQL servers were physical infrastructure. So you look at it, there's 4 web front-ends, should be able to support that user base without a problem. We went in and did a number of tests. We tested using the HP Load Center, but we also used HP OpenView Monitoring, Perfmon, and Netmon to make sure we were capturing all of the statistics required. In our tests, we covered browsers, the Word space, your SharePoint workspace, WebDAV, and PowerPoint, which is what everybody uses at this point. So when you look at these numbers, you can see we got to 250 virtual users. Our maximum time for page load was 41.36 seconds. That's just 250 users on this infrastructure. So at that point, we found out we really had some serious issues with this infrastructure. And when we hit 1,500 virtual users, we're looking at a maximum of 259.63 seconds. So you can see that we've got some serious, serious issues going on in the infrastructure. So what we did is we actually took out the virtual tier. We found out, in a later slide I'll show you, we found out that the virtual infrastructure was actually oversubscribed. We were hitting things like NUMA boundaries, CPU overutilization and contention. We were hitting lots of other things. So we went to a physical infrastructure for the web front ends, and we went virtual for the app, crawl, and query. We also added what's called App Fabric Distributed Cache Servers into the environment. As for an intranet, most of your users are just going to simply want to see that same page. They're going to see that, you know, that article or that newsletter that they're putting up there. And that's what we did. And it brought down our load time to the under 5 seconds, so up to 1,500. We actually did a load test of 10,000 users, and we were still hitting load times of 4.5 seconds with this infrastructure. Yeah, and we didn't just do it from the data center. Our load cannons for these tests were in 4 geographically dispersed locations across Canada, one close to the data center, one on the completely other side of the country. So we were getting good times at this point. No, because the load balancer requirement was still on the web front ends. We still had that there. The app fabric just allowed the caching from the SQL. We weren't hitting our SQL servers as hard and as often.
Mike, can you repeat the question so that
it's recorded? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. The question was, did the app fabric remove the load balancer requirement? And once again, it did not. The app fabric was just there to support the caching from the SQL environment. It can, yes, it would. If we did not place it in that tier. If you did place it in front of the web front end tier, we could do that. But right, the resource allocation, right, and that's all available to you with the app fabric, but we just wanted it simply for that caching, distributed cache load. So this is what we found when we started doing deep dives. Like I said, Neumann boundaries. For those of you who don't know what Neumann boundaries are, it's non-uniform memory accessing, thank you. Great, went right out the brain. And that's when you go beyond what you really should for memory access. If you look at the Microsoft documentation, they point out that you'll get about an 8% degradation as soon as you cross that boundary. And we did hit that boundary very closely. Host CPU contention, lots of that. The other thing that we found, and I'm sure a lot of you have seen this, is clock synchronization from the virtual machines to your host. They, for some reason, had that turned on. The host machine was out of sync with the world time, and we got into timer jobs that were not running. This was for those of you who are from Canada, you're required to have things in both English and in French. We were not able to do a lot of the variations. The timer jobs were not running correctly for variations, so we were running into a lot of issues with that. And the other thing that we did find that was very interesting, for any of you that are using physical load balancers, if you use sticky sessions, I don't know, that was not turned on. So we were having a lot of round robin sessions that were causing issues with the environment. So sticky sessions is a good thing to turn on for your load balancer. The next company we look at is a package company. They're a shipping company. You probably see them coming with your Amazon packages or your, you know, Best Buy packages all the time. And they're implementing a very customized SharePoint intranet based on 2010, very high level social, very, very customized user interface. But they're also using it for collaboration and web content management. We came in late to this game. We did not do the RPS calculations. We did nothing of that nature. When they're looking at an average user base of about 10,000 users and an average peak usage of about 30,000 users, their entire user population is 300,000 users. This was their original architecture. You can see that it's quite distributed. They've got a shared services farm. They've got an enterprise farm that supports all the enterprise eCal features, a standard farm, fast, and that sort of thing. When they implemented the customized functionality, we were just using user testing on a browser, going to a home page, going to a MySite home or host, and things of that nature. On a MySite host with 5 users, we got a load time of over 45 seconds. That's just 5 people sitting in a room, hitting enter one time. And I'm not kidding. We sat there with our stopwatches and timed it, 45 seconds. The homepage, 5 users for a portal site, it would time out. It would just come up and say, page cannot be displayed. In the project and community, we were using a publishing site feature for that, and that was 30 to 45 seconds. So what we ended up doing is actually stripping out a lot of the services that we wanted to do. The original architecture had a lot of the services existing on a services farm and being shared out. So they were sharing user profile, sharing out search and that thing, and their social platform. We actually condensed that into having one custom intranet farm and having only search being shared from their standard farm. And you can see we still have 4 servers for the custom internet farm and 2 app servers. SQL is still clustered. It's just two clusters, two instances on each cluster. So at that point, we did get, they're currently in beta testing two, so they're currently running at 1,500 users, and they are getting under 5 second load time for everything across the board. But the interesting thing is, what was the cause of these things? Everybody who wants to do custom intranets and custom pages and nice JavaScript and jQuery things really need to take these things into consideration. We see them, I think every implementation I've done since 2010 was implemented and have seen these. Store procedures. If you have a bad store procedure, you're going to have bad performance. JavaScript. I know developers, and I'm a developer by heart, love to have JavaScript nice, typed, nice line breaks, everything. Not great when you're trying to do this over a large network. Once again, clock synchronization. Their SQL configuration. They had misconfigured their SQL environment to do a number of things. They were doing redundant indexes. They were actually doing cleanup on indexes and things of that nature that caused a lot of these issues to appear intermittently. What? Yep. We had to fix the max up, was also incorrect. And they also had, I'm sure you've seen this, they did not have a DBA come in and configure their SQL. Their SQL was taking all the memory possible to it and would not release any of its memory. So, of course, when there was any sort of additional load put on it, it couldn't go anyplace else. So we had lots of that. No caching was configured. None. They weren't caching anything in the entire environment. And, I mean, why not? Then they did DB dynamic expansion. As we all know with SQL, Microsoft's recommendation is to, if you're going to have a 250-gig database, expand it to 250. Don't do this dynamic 10, 5% expansion. And we were hitting that load, and it would expand, hit it again, and it would expand every day. So these are some of the lessons learned we've learned over 4 years of working just with HP on the Gen 8 and Gen 7 servers with SharePoint. And a lot of these are things that people like to do, and we've determined they may not be your best implementation for a SharePoint environment. Thing like host memory ballooning on your virtual environment. I understand the virtual infrastructure of why you'd want to do that. Is it perhaps your best choice? Probably not. If you're going to give the RAM to the machine, let the machine have that RAM and run with it. You should never store your VHD files on a host, direct attached storage. Every day we see that. Just don't do it. I'm sorry. You want to mix the roles on your host. You want to have a web front end, you want to have an app server, you want to have a query server. Mix those up. Don't just have all web front ends on one host. NUMA boundaries. Anybody who's doing a virtual infrastructure, please, please, please read Microsoft's documentation on NUMA boundaries. You're going to run into them. You're going to need to know what they mean. And don't do clock synchronization with the host, please. Because they'll end up calling me, and I'll have to say, is this what you're doing? And you really do need to look at these things very closely. Things like caching. It's a really important thing. Monitor, monitor, monitor. SQL, web front ends. Either use Perfmon, SCOM, whatever the infrastructure that you have for monitoring, SharePoint becomes the go-to environment for your users. I've seen it in more organizations. I've been working with SharePoint since 1999, the original version of Digital Dashboard Resource Kit, and I've seen it go to more places in that way. Custom UI. I know people don't like the UI with SharePoint. I understand that. But make sure when you're doing custom UX that you get somebody who understands custom UX design. And location of servers and SQL tuning. And the other thing that I think is probably the most overlooked thing that we've seen more times, and that's why they bring us in a lot, do pre-release testing of your SharePoint environment. Test what it can actually do. Don't just believe either the sizer, which I use all the time. Every time I use it, I still test my environment. Make sure you test it. Make sure you use LoadRunner, Visual Studio. Whatever you use, test your environment before you release it to your users, because you'll hear it. They'll tell you it's not working. It doesn't do what it wants to do for me. Okay.
All right, so obviously we've hit the end of our presentation, but as I said earlier, let's make this interactive. We want to hear what you guys think. We want to hear the questions that you have. It doesn't necessarily need to be on this presentation. We have mics in the room. If you have questions, you know, we're the guys to answer them. So step on up. Anyone? Anyone? Yes. No. No, it's all with internal SQL. We were trying to create an environment for testing that was relatively simplistic. So we weren't trying to overhaul it. We weren't trying to create an environment. That doesn't mean that we don't do that. That means for this testing, what we were really looking at is we wanted to look at the performance of Gen 8, not necessarily the performance of the backend storage. Now, we do a lot of testing around the storage as well. The storage group loves SharePoint because SharePoint sells a lot of storage. So we get a lot of their toys to play with quite a bit. But the performance we wanted to talk about really was around the front end, because there's a lot of stories we can do, and we can get really deep into the storage, different models, different technologies within the storage. But it ends up being a very long presentation, and it ends up being a presentation that's more of a sales presentation, and I think that's kind of where we wanted to try and avoid that. Any non-SharePoint questions? Any HP questions? Yep.
Mm-hmm. On a guest, you have to go to the virtual host here to figure how memory ballooning has been configured and if it's actually occurring. So if you don't have access to it, if you're the SharePoint administrator and don't have access to it, we have to pretty much go back to that virtual team and start asking those questions. Unfortunately, that's the way that most organizations have split it up. They don't want your SharePoint administrator knowing what's going on the host, and you have to go back and ask. And it has to become a team scenario.
You actually are favoring mixing applications on the host variant. But, I've done this before. I'm working along with the SAN engineers. I'm getting a performance degradation. I said, what are you doing on the other application? Summary index. I'd rather stack my data on one single host than be putting other applications sharing applications.
Right. So there's two questions, I think, in there. And the question was, do we recommend stacking everything onto one host or splitting them out by role? I think when you're looking at the database level, and if you're going to have a database, if you're going to virtualize your database tier, then probably your best idea is to have all database tiers existing on one host. I would actually recommend doing boot from VHD on a host for a SQL tier, and not mixing those roles. But when you're talking about things like web front end, query roles, and crawler roles, though in application roles, mixing those is probably the better choice in my mind, because you end up having, if you have four web front ends on one host, all those web front ends are load balanced. Now you have everything hitting at one host. You don't have them staggered across four different hosts. So you're still going to see all of a sudden performance degradation because you're hitting 100% utilization across everything, especially at peak CP, especially at peak time between 11 and 3 on Tuesday afternoon is when we really classify as peak usage. Right. Right. So I think if I heard, you don't recommend using the dynamic memory allocation. I don't think it is supported on the virtual infrastructure. It's right. That's what he's saying, yes. So are you saying, are you talking about the output caching or dynamic memory allocate? Sorry, well. Oh, the app fabric. So the app fabric servers were not virtual. They were physical app. And app fabric is not recommended in a documentation to be on a virtual infrastructure. It is, you can be put on it, but it's not recommended for being on infrastructure. Right. Lights right in the face.
Anything else?
Well, we look at, we really do look at the calculations. So when we do it in two folds. We look at doing the calculations for RPS and then doing the sizer. So based upon RPS requirements, we'll know what we need to do from that. Normally for an organization, we work with those two organizations are looking at, you know, 30,000 and the 300,000 user organization. So we look at what's that user base gonna do, how often are they gonna be on a server, things like that. And four, we have found, especially with SQL, with 2010, it may change in 2013, but with 2010, the best practices recommendation was to have, you know, the four web front ends to one SQL instance scenario. So we've tried very hard to keep within that for most of our organizations, unless there's a requirement to go to 8 and 2 SQL instances in the back. So we've done that. We've also found it's sort of that sweet spot for that, you know, peaking of right before Christmas or whenever they're going to go back in and do their timesheets and things like that on SharePoint or go in and do searching. We've just seen that that is the sweet spot for those organizations that are going to have the 30,000 user, 40,000 user, 50,000 user place, people hitting it. The large organizations, the one that we showed with the package shipping company, the reason it was four is because they have an additional two other environments that are just pure collaboration environments. That they're not doing this custom collaboration. The custom collaboration, the custom intranet is specifically for intranet purposes, so there's not any collaboration. It's just people coming in, viewing of data, viewing of newsletters, viewing of articles and policies and forms and that things, and that's all they're doing. So their larger environment where the collaboration and their project management services are going on has four web front ends in a standard farm and six web front ends on the enterprise farm. And then it has SQL instances. It has two SQL instances running in the enterprise and one in the standard farm to support those services. So we've scaled, that's scaled out quite a bit. And it's all based upon workload scenarios. We've seen organizations with one and we've seen organizations with, I think the most I've seen is 32 web front ends. Right. So there's the Microsoft sort of calculation that's in some of the documentation where you take the number of cores on a server and you divide the number of RAM, the amount of RAM by it. So if you have a total of, if it's a two core, if it's two quad cores, so 8 core total, and then you have 32 gigs of RAM, so it's four gigs. So that's the way that they do that. But if you look at some of the other documentation based upon higher core levels, when you go above like the 8 cores to the 16, 32, 64 core levels, the NUMA boundaries start to move. And the nice thing is within the server, you can actually see, if you have the host installed with either Windows or something, you can actually see NUMA boundaries within the task manager. Right, and the SQL Server that shows you as well. So even just with the basic task manager within the server platform, you can see those NUMA boundaries as well. If, just if you don't cross NEMA boundaries, there's really not a degradation of performance. Right. Yeah, so you have to, it's sort of that, you know, divisional factor. So if you can't go, if you have 32 gigs and 8 cores, you can't add an additional set of RAM and then go to 5 gigs and have that. It's, you pretty much need to go 32, 64. 64 divided by 8 is. Yeah, hyper-threading is turned on. Do I recommend enabling hyper-threading? I do, especially if you're especially on a virtual tier. And we've seen it also do a performance increase in the SQL to hyper-thread it as well. And especially we've seen with the package shipping company, we went from a Gen 6 server to a Gen 8 server, an HP server, and we actually did see quite a bit of an increase using a Gen 8 server with hyper-threading. But they jumped 2 generations.
Yeah.
They were using old servers, yes, and we got new servers.
All right, anyone else? All right, well, we're here all week. We're down on the show floor. So if you have questions later, things that come up, things you didn't think about today, come on down to the show floor. Ask any one of us. I'm working the Sizer desk. I know Mike is in and out of the services desk, but there's a lot of services folks here as well. So come on down, talk to us if you have any questions. We do have a couple reminders. Get your card stamped because we are giving away the HP Slate 2. I don't know if you can say this here. We move around. It does, rules say that you have to get 3 of the 4 sessions that we're presenting stamped. If you've missed the 2 yesterday, we'll give you 2 today because we know you schlecked down here and it's kind of far out of your way, so we appreciate that. So we'll give you 2 stamps, keep you back in the running. And we have 1 more session that's happening tomorrow during lunch, and we hope you join us. It's an interactive session about talking to some of the engineers, some of the services folks, about some stuff you're seeing, some of the stuff we're seeing, a lot of the concerns that we're seeing around SharePoint deployments happening in the world today.
And it's at 11:45 in Mariners A and B. And for the drawing, it is Wednesday at 4:30, and you have to be present to win the slate, one of the slate 2s.
We're at 4, right, Shell? We're giving 4. Yes, you'll actually get it. We have them here at the show. You will take them home with you. You can be the envy of everyone on your plane.
As long as you get it charged before you get on a plane.
Yes. And we might be able to help with that, too.
Yeah. I think we have cords.
All right, well, thank you, everyone.